Hey there, folks. Welcome to another edition of Stranger in a Southern Land. I, of course, am your host, Jake Manning. Today on the program, I have comedian and my co-host at the 5-Minute Podcast, Jake Stewart. Not Jake Stewart, Jake Stewart. We get into that and we have that discussion. I've made that mistake a couple of times on the 5-Minute Podcast, but I want to make sure in this intro that I make it very clear it is Jake Stewart. Because he is a good friend of mine, and you know, our friendship has grown over this last year, I think now. It's almost been a year. But we get into it, and my first impressions of meeting him and stuff like that, that weren't that favorable. But this is a fun conversation, and also, too, this podcast kicks off Jake Stewart Week at Jake Manning Production Industries, Stranger the Southern Land, whatever I would call my production company if I had one. Because Jake Stewart will be appearing on just about all, well, not just all the podcasts that I am producing this week. So he was making some sort of appearance on all of them and stuff like that. It is his birthday week. So this is my birthday present to him, is tons of free exposure on Jake Manning Enterprises Incorporated. So happy birthday to Jake Stewart. And, you know, this is a wonderful conversation. And it's just good to sit down and talk with a friend, you know, because like we just kind of talk to each other at open mics. And, you know, it's usually like a short little riff here. Or we'll talk for 20 minutes off stage. And we only get to talk for 5 minutes on stage. And we could talk much longer. And it would be entertaining for everybody. At least we think so. But very excited to bring you this conversation, you guys, as always. So, I get good people on here, and Jake Stewart is no different. Did I say Stewart or Stewart? Regardless. Anyways, big thank you to ShiningWizards.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, or ShiningWizards.com, or Shining.com or Wizards.com. I'm sure you're great people, but you're not as good as the ShiningWizardsNetwork.com people. They're doing a fantastic job of getting this program to as many eyeballs, earbuds, and earballs as possible. So I can't thank them enough for all the hard work that they do for me, and I can't appreciate them for everything they do for making this cool kids table a little bit larger. And as always, thank you to my producer, Don, at DSCT.TV. Thank you much, Don, for all of your hard work. Now, I just want to give you just a couple of dates, not too many. Actually, just two, really. But just want to let you know about the X16 PWX, Saturday and Sunday, November the 19th and 20th, here in Charlotte, North Carolina. For more information about those two shows, very big tournament. For more information about that, make sure you log on to PWXPro.com. Now, as always, I got tons of cool stuff coming up that's going on that I didn't mention right there, but I don't want to bog down the beginning of this podcast. I have a problem of doing that in the past, but I'm going to rectify that because you guys want to hear these conversations. You want to hear me just feed dates to you and stuff like that. And you might be fast forwarding through this, so I'm going to give your thumb a little bit of rest on fast forwarding through all of these intros and announcements. But like I said, lots of other cool stuff coming down the pike, and the best way for you guys to know about that is by following me on social media at Manscout Manning on Twitter or at Manscout Manning on Instagram if you have a question about the podcast. Or if you want to become a sponsor of this podcast, make sure you email me at jake@sslshow.com. Or if you want to book me for an upcoming wrestling event, make sure you email me at manscoutmanning@yahoo.com. Anyways, without further ado, let's jump into this wonderful conversation with my co-host, my comedian friend, and one of my best friends, Jake Stewart, here on Stranger in the Southern Land. Loud, just right.
No, that's good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello.
That's right.
Okay, this is going to be interesting. I've never had a conversation without you've never really had a hearing a person. Like I'm only hearing a fake version of you.
When I talk to people, I don't listen to them whatsoever.
Is right. Just like, no. Well, yeah, that, but also like I've never like I'm not hearing you. I'm hearing like a
modulated version.
Yeah, like
of
this
my
isn't
voice.
Us. Like really.
Conversing.
Talking.
No.
Yeah, this is new.
This
That's
is new.
All. That's okay.
You're hearing me the way that you hear Bob Dylan.
Right, exactly.
That's the best way to...
And it's like talking back.
Yes.
When I talk, like, Bob Dylan doesn't, like, stop his song to talk to me.
To check if you're still online. Right. Like, hey, Jake, you still listening to what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, I'm there, Bob. Cool. We're on a first name basis. It's fine.
BD.
Yeah, like, me and BD.
BD. You know.
It sounds like a children's book he'd write, me and BD.
What would a children's book with Bob Dylan be?
I don't know. That would be, it would be like a little kid who like meets Bob Dylan and they just have like an adventure for the day. And mm-hmm. there'd be like some lesson that he learns at the end.
But very important lesson. Right. You know what I'm saying? like
music and being yourself and that kind of thing. You know, like it's okay if you're not a good singer, you can still be the best musician of all time.
That and how to probably be a social justice warrior.
Oh, yeah, of course. Things, of course. The important whatever.
Exactly. Reuben Carter was in jail for X amount of years. Mm-hmm. You know, and then sometimes you find love, but she runs off to the North Country.
You know, it happens.
It happens.
Kids got to be ready for that.
Just brace them for everything that comes their way.
Exactly.
Exactly. Nailed it. You ready for this? Because
yeah, let's go.
No, we've already
gone. Of course we are. You Pete Holmes'd me.
Pete Holmes'd you. Chris Hardwick'd you. Like every one of them.
You're like one of those professional podcasters.
Yes, because I've got to relate. We got to connect personally, which mm-hmm. is something we don't normally do.
Because we've never met before this day.
No, and we barely connect even when we do.
Our like, other podcast, we very specifically don't.
Oh, it's all about business. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like... I think the only way to really equate it, it's like a married couple having sex. Just get right to it.
Sure.
It's done and over within like, 5 minutes.
Just another chore, laundry, sex. And then
yeah, just like, all right, like, let's just take care of this basic human need, get it done and over with, and that's it.
Then we can watch Everybody Loves Raymond. And
yes, exactly.
It's the only show married couples watch,
We're
I
just
assume.
Trying to get to the point where I'm just still wearing a t-shirt with no like underwear on mm-hmm. and like, yeah. Just
that's the life, man.
That's the dream, isn't it? That's the dream.
I'm pretty sure that's...
That's what civilians want out of life.
Yeah, just a t-shirt and no pants.
No pants on. Like, just old man, just
yeah,
hanging
just like
shirt
gross,
on.
Hanging all out.
Like, yeah, just let this air out overnight. Debate on whether I'm going to take a shower tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know. Although, that's a good slogan. We need to keep that for our 5-minute podcast.
Okay, sure.
It's like married couples having sex. Mm-hmm.
Just all business.
Just all business right away, and it's done in five
and
minutes.
And then it's done. It was like done. Had that like pretty nice compliment, but also kind of like, it's like, you know, I see you guys live every week, and like, you're just okay. But then like, I listen to every episode, and like, it's really funny.
You know, like, yeah, it's one of those things.
Thanks,
like, Don. It's like Johnny Carson. Like, he wasn't funny every night, yeah. But like, you had to like watch
you have
every
to, like, get, you have
single.
To understand. It takes a while, but then you get into it.
We're a slow burn.
Quote of the night. Yes.
A slow burn for a podcast that happens in five minutes. I think it's already been 5 minutes now.
Yeah, it was nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you. Good to see you. Bye. #5. Yeah. But anyways, Jake Stewart, thanks for coming over the home studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me after I outed you on Twitter for not inviting me yet.
You were on the docket as always. Mm-hmm. You're just one of those guests that I know that I can always get. See, backhanded compliments. Backhanded compliments.
I'm one of those guests that like doesn't do anything with their life, so like I'm always available.
You're just always available. Well, I'm out trying to get like Muggsy Bogues and the mayor of Charlotte. And
we'll
like,
have one of these filler episodes when Jake's available.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I think we could talk about this in the sense that this is a part of the big Jake Stewart week.
The week of Jake.
The week of Jake, where you appear on basically all of my podcasts. Mm-hmm. And this is basically going to kick the whole thing off.
Yep.
So, and what's even more miraculous, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
this episode will come out. I'm going to check the calendar to make this correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe this is going to come out the day before the election.
Ooh.
So like people could be listening to this in a much different world.
This could be either a great day or a terrible day.
Yeah, if they're listening to this on a Tuesday, mm-hmm. there might be far more gloom and doom going on.
A lot of people are listening to this just like very stressed out right now about the whole world.
Yeah, like they're very rethinking their positions in life, mm-hmm. how it's going to affect them, you know, what country they're going to move to, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know,
Mexico's cheaper, but yeah. Canada's got the health care. So.
That or Donald Trump's going to be president. Yeah. I love making those turns real fast.
In which case, we'll all just kill ourselves. So it's either move to Canada or death. Those are our options.
Well, we could laugh about it now. You know what I'm saying? We could laugh about it now.
It's a month away.
It's a month away.
It's not in my mind.
Or we might be laughing about it like hours from now. Yeah.
Just crying and crying.
Oh, so yeah, just, you know, but like, no, you're a good friend of mine, you know, and part of the reason I wanted to do the 5-minute podcast with you, I don't remember how it all started. Like,
we were just joking around.
Like we do.
Friend comedians.
Which I'm not a very sociable person.
Me either.
Yeah. But somehow it's we found each other that way. Like we
were just riffing bits at the Muse.
Yeah.
And then I think it was a day when we both didn't have very strong sets. And so we were riffing after that. And we're why don't we just do this?
I
this is funnier than us bombing.
Exactly. I think this is better than both of our sets. Yeah. Just us talking.
We should do this live and then let the audience tell us how funny we are.
Exactly. But I think it's when we stop giving a crap about the audience is we've actually gotten better.
That's my... when bits are for me, always the selfish comedian. It's I don't care that this is going to be silent for the next 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I like this joke.
Yeah, it's like a couple episodes ago, I was made the audience really mad. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm glad you, and me being the bad guy wrestler, it felt really good.
I know you're mad. I'll feed on it.
Exactly. I love your booze. Now all I need is for you to come in and trash me, and then you're like, yes, we love Jake Stewart. You're the hero. You're the baby face in the scenario. We love you.
Yeah, I'll hit you with my stool, and it'll be great. Take your belt.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, that was the whole concept behind it. But that was the thing, you and me, we could just bounce off of each other for whatever reason. Our humor was very similar that way. We had similar references and stuff that. So I was like, let's just get up on stage and let's just do this.
Yeah.
And it's been fun.
It's been so much fun.
But I must say, and I hope we're going to have to rewind here a little bit too. Okay. I hope my girlfriend didn't scare you too much this past Saturday. Because there was a couple of weeks there where we weren't clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the fuck is Jake's problem? I dare him to come up with a fucking question. Because it was just happened to be weeks where you had nothing, which I have that problem as well. But it just happened to be a series of 2 or 3 weeks where I don't know, man. And I'm like, motherfucker, I just wrote these 2 really good bits. I need you to co-sign and jump on all. I need yes and all of this.
For me, my problem was for a while, I get to this point where I'm not sure, if what I self-doubt a lot. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I feel I talk too much sometimes in the podcast. So I'm like, I'll sit back this one. I'll let Jake do his thing and I'll jump in an Andy Richter type kind of thing. Cause I felt there were a couple episodes where I just dominated the conversation and I was like, I gotta step back a little.
Well, little do you know, I'm very unselfish and in my performance, especially in pro wrestling, that's kind of been my detriment of my entire career.
Right.
Now, but I still have that mentality. As long as it's a good show, I don't care. As long as I've got those little things. So sometimes I like to just hang back and then jump in where I jump in. And sometimes that's where I find out I'm the strongest. But at the same time, too, there are times where I feel like the ship needs to be led.
Right.
But at the same time, too, I never keep tally of ooh, Jake's talking for a really long time.
See, that's the weird thing. I'm both a narcissist, but also have crippling self-doubt at the same time, which is a really weird paradox to have that I'm
Because you'll put yourself out there so far.
And then I'll be ooh, no, this is bad.
But you're already too far. You already jumped off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like a Wile E. Coyote kind of thing.
Yes.
And then exactly. I'm like, well, now here's the fall. So that's what those couple weeks were. But it's one of my favorite things to do every week is the 5-minute podcast.
I didn't know
I was putting out that it didn't, that well, it wasn't that way.
There were 2 or 3 weeks I always tell my girlfriend, hey, it was a bad set at the station. Mm-hmm. And you know, 5-minute podcast is really good. Or,
right,
hey, both of them were really good. Or both of them were okay or whatever. And I always text her. But there was like 3 weeks there. Like, I was like, God, is Jake going to fucking take this shit seriously? Like, I paid for this goddamn website. Like, I'm saying, I'm the one doing all the work.
I do take it seriously. Yeah, and it was just in my self-doubt phase.
Yeah. And I was just like, I was just mad about it. But like, subsequently, all of a sudden, like, you showed like, hey, we need to get better. Mm-hmm. And that's all I needed to hear you say to me. It's like, hey, that wasn't great. Let's do better.
Yeah.
I will try better. And the next week you tried better. And then ever since then, and then now we don't care about anybody.
Yeah,
and now we're fantastic. So at least in our mind, because we could care
exactly.
less.
Exactly.
We could care less. So we finally got to that groove.
Yeah.
But like, my girlfriend's been kind of out of touch that happened, that we've kind of like figure out what it is that makes it great.
Right.
Because when we talk to each other, we don't care about anybody else other than
ourselves. Exactly. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's only about making each other laugh.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we found where the magic was.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend hasn't been hip to that happening. So she just knows you as this guy wasting my time. So she like, when you were on stage at the last all organic open mic.
Right.
As soon as you got on stage, she grabbed me by the back of the shirt and pulled me in. She goes, "You want me to talk to him?" Because she never knew what you looked like before. She goes, "You want me to talk to him? I will fuck him up because he's wasting your time and our time. Because your time is very important because it's less time that I can see with you. Even though all the time that I spend at the 5-minute podcast, even the recording and then back home and putting it up, she's not even here." Like, it's time that we wouldn't even, like, doesn't interfere with our time at all. Ever. Like, at all. Not even a second whatsoever is taken out of our time whatsoever. It's not like it's happening on date night for
us. Well, because I even told her, I was like, I if you need a night, like, you can. We've skipped
a week
before.
She works every Monday. She loves working every Monday. I'm actually in bed before she's ever back home. Matter of fact, as soon as she's done working, she goes to the bar. So she's not even like
She
doesn't even come home. She doesn't even come home to see me, to spend time with me. So,
well, now I'm just going to waste your time forever.
But yeah, she was just like, you tell him. And that's why like you went a little bit longer is because like she went off and wouldn't let me go.
Mm.
And I set my phone down over on the table. So I'm like, I gotta go. She goes, no, you listen to me.
Right.
And she's like, you tell. I'm like, no, I had to get the phone. And then I came back and you were already over by six, like over by 2 minutes.
Yeah, I felt bad. I realized I started a bit when I probably had like a minute left, but it was like a 4-minute bit. And I was like, oh no, why did I start this? I can't just abandon ship now because it would have no ending.
Well, that's the thing. Like when you do stand up, like yours is, I appreciate the way you do stand up because I think that takes a considerable amount of guts. You have some very long bits.
They're all very long bits.
They're very long bits. They're very good bits. They're very well written. You know, and I feel like there's just enough punchlines for all of them. And I think you've read crowds and figure out, hey, this is a little long and I need punchlines here, or you'll come up with a tag, or you're very deliberate as far as that way. But yeah, you get into a bit and it's like, oh, if you don't like these next 4 minutes.
Yep. Oof. There have been many times where like, I have that joke about the Lion King.
Yes.
Which is probably one of the longest ones that I do, but it usually does the best of them, so oftentimes that'll end my set. And I'll know right away if someone's going to like it or not. But once I already say this first sentence, it's like, we're in. I can't just abandon. I'm like, you guys remember the Lion King? And there's dead silence. I'm like, well, here we go. We're jumping in, so let's do it.
Well, that's the thing that terrified me when I first started, because you know the early stuff that I got was always like, you have to be joke, 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 joke. And like I've come to realize, like, I don't really do that, and like I'm more longer stuff. But then I'm starting to realize my longer stuff can be shortened. So a lot of my bits end up usually in about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Two, 3 minutes on the long end, or have a series of things or chunks of stuff that I'll just kind of get out right away. So I realize if you're not buying this one, I could cut it off.
You can just move. Yeah.
Because I remember hearing like a podcast of Bob Newhart talking about how all of his bits, like his closer, he had 3 exit points.
So he can just end it like on a high note.
So if he knew there was a high note, he could get out. If he knew if one of them didn't hit, he had another one. But he said if he ever got to that last one and it didn't hit, he was screwed. He just like, all right, I'm out of time.
I gave them three chances.
Yes. Like, you know, but he'd have these, leave these little exit points, or mm-hmm. he'd have a finish that would always go well, but he'd have three ways to get there.
Right.
If he had to.
That's so, I like that.
Yeah, so that's why I always structured it so I have these out points. So if mm-hmm. one of these jokes of these chunks works really well mm-hmm. or it doesn't work, I've got another one. But, you know, I know this fourth one will always... I'll save this one for the last because I know it'll always work.
Right.
So, like, I've always looked at it like that. But, yeah. Like, you...
I wish I could do that.
Yeah. I've seen some ones that have been... Oof.
Well, because all my... They're all long because they all kind of, like... They're all building to, like, the end of it. Mm-hmm. But, like, so if I cut it short, then it just doesn't make sense.
There's no context.
Right. Yeah. Like, the joke that I do about message in a bottle.
Yeah.
If it's not going well after I talk about the first verse, I can't just stop. Because then it's like, I have a problem with this one verse. Like, it's like, yeah. No, because that's not where the problem is. You know, I have to take it through. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I'm so jealous of people like Spencer, who can just, like, shoot off like 8 jokes in 30 seconds.
Yeah, like, here's a joke. Okay, you didn't like that one, I got the next one.
I know.
You don't like this one, I got the next one.
She's so such she a good joke writer.
Yeah, and she can turn it around in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. She can turn it around in 30 seconds.
I'm a terrible joke writer.
Yeah, but you have these long right. bits, but yeah. Like, when did you like decide to like write these bits? Because obviously your thing was acting and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And you seem more like a sketch improv guy
uh-huh.
when I first met you, and then all of a sudden you started doing stand-up.
Well, that's very... accurate. It was I started, let's see, in Wilmington. I started a friend of mine started a Rocky Horror Picture Show Shadowcast.
Okay,
hold on, we're getting there.
And yeah, to the part about you being Meatloaf,
we'll get there. Several times, and I've met Meatloaf once. Oh my god,
I'm jealous.
It was so great. He makes people call him Meat.
Yeah,
not Meatloaf. Just you meat. Call him Meat.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't know if I... Okay. So we started this Rocky Horror Picture Show Shadowcast. And then my friend Wesley, who started it, also wanted to get into sketch comedy because he realized we kept writing these like little bits that like we wanted to film. And eventually we're like, you know, this is basically just exactly what sketch comedy is. And none of us like realized it because we were in college. So we started a show, did that for about 5 years. And then... I moved to Charlotte, where there's only like one sketch comedy troupe, and they're good, but our styles don't really mesh. Like, I've seen them a couple times.
And they're very hard to get into. They put a lot of work mm-hmm. in, and they're very dedicated. Like, I've had them on the podcast before, yeah. and the way they talk about it, it's like we meet together and we work
oh, yeah. 4 sketch days comedy
a
week, is,
mm-hmm. and just there's a lot of yep. a lot of work to it.
Ours in Wilmington, we would have 3 meetings on Sunday alone, just like different types of production meetings. They have like a general meeting, a writer's meeting, and then like a video production meeting. Also, Sunday was like booked. Rehearsals every Monday and Wednesday, and then usually shows on Wednesday as well. But when we first started, it was like 4 rehearsals like every day in a row, and then the show, and then do it again the next week. Brand new show entirely, like...
Which
a
is
a lot of work in a sketch
which
comedy.
I think that's always the mistake of every sketch comedy mm-hmm. group is like, we're going to put up a new show every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like that's the big, they realize that lesson very
yeah,
quickly.
Very quick. Now we do monthly shows in Wilmington mm-hmm. instead of the weekly shows. they're still going strong. Pineapple Shaped Lamps. They've got a West Coast branch now. They've grown, so they're in LA now too.
Oh, that's cool. So mm-hmm. it's... You know, bi-coastal, it's kind of big.
Exactly.
And like, do they do it on YouTube or is it like mm-hmm. for the shows?
Like,
I don't know the trajectory of necessarily like sketch comedy on the internet. And that's the thing, too.
We're trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird dynamic because it's so accessible now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys and girls can come together, write sketches, and put them online.
Yeah.
Like, it's wide open for everybody. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, too, you know, you obviously want it to be filmed properly,
right.
lit properly, mm-hmm. sets and everything like that. And of course, you have a limited amount of time, but at the same time, too,
mm-hmm.
not having that deadline sometimes
yeah.
leaves it open to like, next week, the week after that, mm-hmm. you know, like I just filmed some sketches just recently and like, I have not had time to edit them. Like,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
And there's so
we've
much
only filmed
it.
2 of them. So like, and I haven't even got around to editing one of
yeah.
them. And this has been months.
That's what yeah our comedy troupe now I think has like 30-ish members. like 10 of them actors, and then everyone else is like different like production crew kind of stuff. Because Wilmington, we all went to UNCW, which is like a big film school, so most of them are film majors and then acting majors and all that kind of stuff. So like,
which is the school I should have went to. Mm-hmm. I could look back on it like, you know, I went to Western Illinois University mostly because my father went there, and then I heard that, you know, they had a good broadcasting department. But mm-hmm. here's the thing. There's a difference between broadcasting and film.
Oh, yes.
Did not know that mm-hmm. from my small town.
Very.
I just like, you got a camera?
Yeah. Clearly, this is how movies are made.
Exactly. Then everything like I learned was like about the news. And it was like literally like junior year. I'm like, mm-hmm. when are we going to learn how to make films?
Like, why haven't we watched Citizen Kane yet?
Yeah, why haven't we dissected any of this? Why haven't I learned how to work with film editing? Mm-hmm. I've just learned how to like type up news stories. Like
read teleprompter.
Yeah, and write commercials and yeah. be a videographer in Quincy, Illinois. Like I appreciate the fact that you guys have a 90% on the job place,
mm-hmm.
but this is not the job that I want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but like I hear about, and of course, like as much as I would have loved the weather, and I definitely could have been on the track team because that mm-hmm. scholarship was a big thing for me.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Like that would have been. I just lament over the fact that, like, gosh, I could have been in Wilmington.
Yeah.
I'm on the track and field team. Could have been laid back. Could have been going to the beach. Could have been hanging out.
It was a great
But
school.
No, I was in Macomb digging myself out of snow, wondering when I'm going to pick up a movie camera. Mm-hmm. So,
but you're doing good now.
Yeah.
Professional wrestler and, like,
yeah, well,
podcast like, empire.
Empire.
You got, like, 8 podcasts.
I
like,
do. What? They keep me warm at night.
Exactly.
I just make pillows, you know, yeah. of them. But no, you're in Wilmington. It seems like there's a lot of creative people there, though. Mm-hmm. That like now that I hear all these stories of people doing everything, and I imagine you were going there about the time that there was a lot of production going on.
Yep.
So the idea that I'm sure that those productions were probably teaming with the university in town, like, mm-hmm. hey, if you want people to come over and be production assistants.
Yeah.
And as we all know, if you just start off as a production assistant, you know, if you stick around long enough and show a little promise, somebody will grab you and take you. And
yeah.
If you show up, you're not show up and not be an idiot.
Yeah. If you do
time.
Your job and professionally.
And they're like, yeah, okay, yeah. well, we could do something with you or give you more responsibility. We'll give you more responsibility mm-hmm. as long as you're willing to like stuff. If they're not getting a whole heck of a lot of pay right away.
Yeah.
You could move up.
I've got many friends that started as PAs and now like they're working in Atlanta as like prop masters on like TV shows. Like they're, like the head boss now of stuff, and they're like my age, and mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, like it's like that was the thought process with me is I'd love to, mm-hmm. would have loved to get into that, but I think about that, I was like, gosh, like I really should, because that would have been a good school. It seemed like it was a great environment, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of great like art in that area.
There is. It's a great town.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a little less now just because of the whole film mm-hmm. thing. Everything moving. Everybody's in Atlanta now, yep. and it seems like that's the place to be.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, because, yeah, when I was there, it was, I think there were 3 TV shows filming at the time, and then, like, a bunch of indie movies, and then Iron Man 3 just showed up to film, but, like, right while Iron Man 3 was filming is when all the tax incentives, like, were cut, and everyone's like, well, guess we're done here, and, like, they all packed up within the next 6 months and moved. Okay, that goes most of the economy of Wilmington. Like, just move to Atlanta.
Because, you know, Wilmington and Savannah, not mm-hmm. too far of a difference.
Nope.
You know, like, nope. not that far away. And then, of course, you know, if you're going to do anything citywide, you can do something in Atlanta. And
exactly.
It's all right there.
It is. So.
Yeah, that was, I always thought that was a frustrating thing. But we could talk politically about that. I think that would bore for the people, but
sure.
Anyways, back to your sketch group.
Yeah, we were doing a lot there, and then I moved here, and there wasn't as much comedy or acting, like because Wilmington's also a big theater community. So when I wasn't doing comedy, I was doing plays and musicals and that kind of stuff. But
what type of what is that community theater scene? Mm-hmm. Like I said, like you're talking about things that I don't
right.
have a lot of experience
sure.
with whatsoever. Like.
In Wilmington, it's there are about, I want to say, 15 to 20 theater companies, which are like groups of people that just want to put on plays. But there's only like 5 theaters. So they're all just like fighting to do shows in these locations kind of stuff. But it's really cool because a lot of really good art comes out of it and like that kind of stuff. There's plays going on all the time. Like at any given point in Wilmington, there are probably 4 plays happening that you could go see, which is great. Here, it's all touring shows, like the Broadway stuff that just comes through like Ovens Auditorium and then like leaves. So it's not a lot for like local actors to get in on. So that's when I was like, well, I need a creative outlet of some sort. And then my cousin Chip, who's a musician, took me to the Muse, and I saw that there were some comedians there, and I was like, well, I grew up watching stand-up.
So it wasn't your first love. It wasn't like...
I mean, as a kid, I always wanted to do stand-up, and I was just always distracted by other stuff. Like, I always had sketch, or I always had, like, plays and that kind of thing that I was never actually able to do stand-up. But then, like, here, it was like... all the distractions were taken away, essentially. And it was like, well, I could then. Like, I can really focus on... because in the sketch troupe, I would do a lot of monologues of type stuff.
Which is basically just a stand-up bit, in a sense.
That's exactly right. Because it would all be focused on, like, things that made me angry that week. And I would just rant about, like, something that made me angry. And then I was like, oh, this is... pretty much exactly most comedians do. It's like, what made me angry this week? And so it was kind of an easy transition in that regard. And it's been really great. I've been more creative doing that than I have like the past couple of years in Wilmington. So it was really nice.
Yeah. And like the scene here is like people complain about it. But like as I keep reminding people, it's you can get up 5-6 times a week.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. I mean, like, some of the crowds aren't all that great. Some nights they're better than others, you know, but there's, you know, enough people running stuff like Nick Alexander, you know, like last month in September, like ran a ton of shows.
Yeah.
Like I think he ran like 10.
Something like at least two a week.
Yeah. You know, it was, minimum. He ran like 10 shows in the entire month of September. So like a third of September was taken up by one comedian booking one show. And then of course, you know, Blair has her once a month show that she does. And then of course, like, you know, I did my show. So all we need is like one or two other people to like pick up the slack and pick up like an open mic or a feature night. But like, it's a big problem here. Is we have like a lot of stages closing. Like we're losing Upstage now. Chop Shop is closed. Tremont is closed.
They're all going to condos.
Yeah. Like we're losing. It's like we're running into a problem that's running into a problem a lot of other places. So like all these condos are moving into areas that are cool, you know, hip and cool areas.
Right.
And they are taking away and bulldozing the things that made that cool and hip. So
like, people want to like they see our stuff and they want to come live here, but then to live here they got to build the apartments.
Yeah,
it's like they're taking away what they came here to see.
And I can't imagine these condos are like that full. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't tell me that all of these condos are complete like vacancies,
booked entirely.
You know what I'm saying? But at the same time too, I feel like that's kind of their selling point is like if you have people on top of each other on top of each other, like if somebody's got a neighbor on both sides. And you got to hear both. There's a higher likelihood you're going to get that dick that blares his music late at night. And all the walls are paper thin.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, obviously, if there's some vacancies, it kind of blocks the noise. I guess is my only thought process on it. But you have space that's empty. You know what I'm saying?
Like you built a room to not book.
you built a buffer zone.
Right.
That's the only explanation that I can come up with why. A condo that's not completely full, and then we're building another one, and then that's not completely full.
Right.
And like some of them look like a fourth full, but like we keep bringing more people in. It's not like, it's not like the population of this city has grown.
No.
At such a rapid rate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if it was growing in the rapid rate that the condos are going up, then this should look like India. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I feel like they're building here now. Because they're like expecting there to be a boom soon, maybe. Like they're trying to a preemptive build. Like maybe they've seen trends or something that like something's.
Well, we were voted like, you know, how many times like the best place to move and all that stuff. But of course, that's before, you know, we had to have.
Before everyone moves here.
Before everyone moved here, before the bathroom police, before All-Star game left, before the NCAA, you know, championship game left. You know, a lot of things were like, hey, we don't want to be here and associated whatsoever. So, like, you know, that's the thing. Like, when the Mills industry closed, like, we turned those into cool venues of stuff, like the Music Factory. But, you know, what happens when all these condos get abandoned? Like, what cool thing can we turn that into?
Haunted houses.
This is the city of haunted houses.
This is where somebody's creative soul died because I moved into Noda and thought it'd be this really cool place. And then it just bulldozed all the creative art. So this is this person who's just sitting at home watching Netflix all the time. Yeah. So like his artistic soul,
their spirit
floats
lives
over
up
and haunts this place.
That he has work left to do. And so his creative soul is left behind.
His creative soul is left behind. He actually is still alive. He's working at Wells Fargo
right now. Yeah,
he's
fine. You can actually see him when you come to the house. But...
Yeah, he's working at the Wells Fargo up the street. He's opening like accounts in other people's names without their knowledge.
Got to meet them quotas.
But no, you got into stand-up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring it back around. And this is a question I've always wondered.
Mm-hmm.
Did you sit down and write all of these bits word for word for word? Because that was one mm-hmm. thing too, is you just like popped up.
Right.
And you had like this entire story
mm-hmm.
that I knew you were new at least.
Right.
But like you had this very detailed thing and were smart enough to have enough punchlines in it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now I kind of see because of sketch, you realize that there has to be a certain amount of like
beats.
Jokes.
Beats
to it. But like, I remember like seeing you for the first time and like, and it's like, wow, this is a very well prepared bit. Cause I was still stumbling around and I go, did he find this? Like, I hate to admit this, but like, did he steal this off of somebody?
Oh.
Or also too, is like, did he buy this bit from somebody? And then I was like, is there a website where you can buy material?
Can you buy jokes?
That was like my first thought process. And then like, I was like, and then like you were hanging around Jordan, Scott Huggins. And mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder if Jordan like wrote this out and Jordan just can never.
Jordan just wanted to workshop other jokes.
Yeah, like Jordan doesn't have enough patience to tell a 4-minute story. So like, Jake's like, I'll take that.
I'll take all of them.
But like, how did you write all of these things that have now become your bits? Like, did you sit down and like write word for word for word for word and then edit mm-hmm. and then put it up? Like,
it's kind of like, it's a mix of that and a lot of them are bits that I've done like, I've been having conversations with people and then like while we're talking, I realize something really weird about what we're talking about. And then like, I try to explore why what we're talking about is so weird. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
So you workshop it with friends.
Kind of.
That's what I do with some mm-hmm. of my premises.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why I always find it weird when people go to open mics. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to say a bunch of premises. I'm like, right. Oh, save that for like when you talk to your regular civilian friends.
That's exactly what it is.
That's what I do on road trips. Is I'll throw something weird out. Mm-hmm. At like 3 a.m. and if it gets people laugh and interested and then sometimes they might throw something to me. I'm like, oh, well, that's a different turn. Okay,
exactly.
That's how you see the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I see it like this. Yeah. Okay. And that's where the funny and that's where the humor is.
Yeah. For like a lot of my bits where I mentioned something about my childhood in passing like to in a conversation and then someone's like, I'm sorry, what happened? And then like, oh, is that weird? I didn't realize that was a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, why is that weird? Tell me why this is weird. And like realizing that like, oh no, there's something that's different that's happening. And then I go home and try to like explore what that is. A lot of them are specifically worded.
Because it was very polished, it's mm-hmm. very deliberate. Like each word, like I was at least picking up on that, like, okay, he said that word the same exact way, mm-hmm. the same exact beat and inclination and inflection and stuff like that. And like, okay, there's a lot of preparation here.
Yeah.
That was immediately what I recognized.
Well, because being like having a degree and being an actor, I treat my stand-up as if it's like a script mm-hmm. that I'm memorizing for a play. So like I'll write everything out. I'll edit it a couple times and then I'll read it out loud and like workshop it to myself a bunch before like I put it up on stage. Like if I'm doing something on stage, I've done it to myself at least like 5 times. Like I'll sometimes even like record myself like saying it and then I'll play it back and listen to it and see if I can find like punch ups and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, and I think when you brought that up, I was like, oh, okay, because I remember you saying that kind of in passing, and I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense mm-hmm. now how we got that way. So like basically it's like you've already done a Jekyll of Jacks open mic of it. Because that's basically what Jekyll of Jacks
right.
is, in you know, one of widely known as not probably one of the best open mics in town. Some nights it's really good.
Yeah.
But there are some nights where you are just literally standing on stage in front of comedians that have heard you do all your bits over and over again, and you are just saying it. You might as well be saying it in front of the mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are a lot of nights like that, but that's, you know, that's what comedy is. Like I said, you have to get through level one of Mario.
You gotta...
There's no warp in level one, stage one of Super Mario Brothers. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You've always got to play the first level. Always. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's no warp there. So, like, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're actually doing it before you even show up to these things.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a lot of that. And then a lot of the training from college is about how to make something feel spontaneous to you, even though it's something that, like, you've done 28 times, like, in a play. If you're on Broadway, you're doing 8 shows a week forever, like years, like every day for years, you're doing the same show. And so, like, a lot of the training is teaching you how to make something feel new to you every single time that you do it. So it's that mixed with how memorized my bits are so that it can still feel fresh to me. That's why actually recently I took like a month off from doing like any comedy is because it just didn't feel new. And I was like, it was a lot of like going to Jack's and like, you've all heard my jokes a million times. Like,
yeah,
this isn't fun for you. This isn't working for me. Like, so I'll take a couple weeks off and then I'll come back when I have more like fresh eyes on that kind of stuff.
Into different directions. And I got some different turns here or I've lived life.
Exactly.
Like that's like my big problem right now is I get in such a rut of like comedy, wrestling. And sometimes the experiences that I have in pro wrestling are not relatable to common people. There might be funny things that happen.
Sure.
But I have to give you a ton of context why this is even funny. And I'm not that good of a comedian yet to even do that right now. And, you know, like I've really tried to dissect how that is and I haven't found the way in yet.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, so like I'll get in a situation like even like last night, like I was like, I really should go, but I had to prepare for, you know, the how did this get booked podcast we're going to do later on. And I was like, I really need to work on this. But at the same time, too, I was like, gosh, like I've been doing a lot of sets recently and I've been trying a lot of stuff and I really need to work on these things, but I really need to go back and work on old stuff. And that's really what I need to be doing right now. And I'm going to be doing a lot of that this upcoming week. But like, you know, maybe it's good that I don't go tonight and beat myself up because I don't think I'm going to get as much out of it as I want, where tonight I have a lot of other work.
Right.
I have to manage an empire right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So, like, it's timely.
So I had to convince myself, don't worry, you're not being lazy. I know you're worried about that, but you're not being lazy. So, but it is that like living life sometimes.
Right.
You don't live it and you're not experienced. Like there's a couple of times I've caught myself where like, you know, very early on, because it was like all about getting 100 sets, you know what I'm saying? Trying to get to that. Or now it's like 200 sets.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 300 sets, you know what I'm saying? Do as many sets as possible. That when you start doing that, you start realizing like all I'm doing is going into bars and telling jokes, and I'm not doing, like I'm not observing life,
right?
Which is really what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like what I run. That's like a big problem I have to notice myself is all I'm doing is working, you know, on everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not touching people and figuring what drives them.
I mean, that's a lot of stuff that you'll learn in like when you take like improv classes or something. There have been comedians who talk about like their whole life was only doing like comedy and improv classes, and like all this time that like they run out of like ideas, and their teacher's like, well, yeah, because you're not living. Like, go take a day, go to the zoo, like have an experience that you can draw from, kind of thing. You can't just do this one thing. You got to be a well-rounded person, and it'll all inform each other kind of thing.
Yeah. Like that's something that I think is very important. And we all forget that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be engaged. We're trying to get engaged with people when we go on stage. And if we're such a damn weirdo and a hermit, it doesn't happen.
You're exactly right.
Like that's what I feel like. I was like, I am too weird right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll come up with a premise or I'll start something. And I'm like, oh, you guys didn't know.
Not a fan of that.
Not a fan of upload speeds at your job. Like, Like, that's not like a primary concern that keeps you up at night.
Setting up wrestling rings, am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's like, I don't.
Oh, you guys haven't been to like a Pilot gas station at 4:30 in the morning and still have another 500 miles to go before sunup? Oof. Oh, okay.
Okay. There goes that joke.
Move it along. But no, like, you talk about like your training and acting and all that stuff. Like, where did that bug come from? Is deciding like, you know, this is what I want to do.
Right.
Where why am I not sitting with a banker right now? That's getting ready to move into.
That's not an entertaining podcast.
Touche.
For me, well, this goes back to not realizing how weird my childhood was. I grew up. My parents ran a children's puppet ministry. Mm-hmm. So like I literally grew up on Christian Sesame Street, essentially. So I've always been around like not like show business necessarily, but like theater in a sense. Like ever since I was a little kid, like my parents like would write scripts and then they would learn them and then we would act them out. And I would watch the whole process as a kid. Like I would see everything backstage happening. Then when the show happens, like I'm out front and I'm watching the final product of things that are going on.
Well, what did you like about that? Because my dad was a farmer. And I obviously I didn't become a farmer. So like, what was it about you as a kid? You know, other than just being around the process, what it is about the kid that you like, I like this. I want to do this.
I'm not entirely sure. Just something like clicked that like I liked how creative it was and how like happy I could see the audience was like when they would watch it. It's like, that's awesome. I want to make people happy, you know? And like, if this is a way that I can do that, that how much fun is that? Plus like watching movies like The Jerk, it's like, this is one of like the funniest movies of all time. I want to make one of those, you know? Just everything that I saw just became something that I wanted to try, if that makes sense.
So it's the idea of like entertaining people and making people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what I've had to dissect myself. Right. Like, why do I want to do the things that I do? 'Cause like I'm hanging on to a wrestling career that I probably shouldn't hang on to, but nonetheless, I have this drive to do it. And I don't for a long time, I didn't know necessarily why, but then I come to realize and I started to analyze the way I like to wrestle and the matches that I like to have. And they're all seem to be comedy based, or they get a couple laughs or they get big reactions.
Yeah.
You know, because you can, if you're making people laugh and then turn around and be a dick, you can swing them the one way and they can swing them back around and give them a big surprise at the end.
Right.
And give them what they want. But like, I enjoy the laughter of large crowds. And so I deduce that it's the, you know, like the Robin Williams, like, oh, make, I like me. I like to make people laugh. Like to make people laugh. You know, just people laugh. They just make me feel good.
Yeah, it does. There's nothing. Yeah. There's no better feeling than like a huge crowd of people like laughing at something that you said. Like, it's the best feeling in the world. Like, why wouldn't you chase after that at all times?
Yeah, because you know that they're not mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. It's like you know for sure that they are happy with what you're doing in that exact moment. Because I don't know, as a little kid, I just didn't pick up on social cues. Like I'm very dumb that way. And I was very dumb that way with women.
Yep.
As most people can attest.
You're hitting home.
I don't pick up on social cues and like, you know, passive aggressive. I don't pick up on, you know, subtle hints. I don't pick up on any of it whatsoever. No. But when I make people laugh, I know exactly how they feel about me in that precise second. And even your worst enemy, if they tell a fantastic joke, you'll laugh.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Even somebody that you hate with like a white hot passion,
yeah,
if they make a joke that just hits you right in your humor spot, you're going to laugh.
I'm laughing and then I'm like mad at myself for laughing, but then I'm like, but it's such a good joke.
Yeah. Like, you can't dispute that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've always found with that. It is the great equalizer of everything.
Absolutely. 'Cause like I grew up the opposite of a comedian, like really happy married parents. Like there's no problems at home or anything like that. But like in school, I didn't have friends, you know, like I was kind of a loner as a kid because I didn't like socializing a whole lot, and just generally people thought I was kind of annoying kind of thing. But I noticed that
like annoying how? You said if you didn't have friends, were you just like picking at people? Like what was your thing?
Okay, I was like, I mean, you've seen the kind of kid that like doesn't stop and like is just like always up in your shit and that kind of thing.
Like, he's always going like, just
I was
just
one of those like super
and
like,
telling you to sit still and you're just like
really ADD and just like all the time. And like looking back on everything of my life is like the most embarrassing thing in the world is like how obnoxious I was as a child. Mm-hmm. And like, so I didn't have a whole lot of like connections, but I noticed that sometimes if I said something funny, someone like would take notice and be like, oh, gotcha. Like, you're not mad at me right now.
and almost like maybe you did know, but little did you know that also too, that now that you're an adult and you see kids like that, you realize that's the thing that probably saved you from like people like, I don't know what this kid is, the most awful human being I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
But like, you could have been like that kid, but then you hit that one laugh and your parents or whoever would be like, oh, now I know why I love this kid.
Yeah.
Or like if you didn't have those funny laughs,
saving grace,
they might just leave you beside the road or just forget you at Disneyland.
It's exactly.
You know, it's your saving grace.
Like, pretty much. It was the lifesaver. Like, but wait, I've got a joke.
I got a solid 5.
real tight.
Real tight. Punchlines every 8 seconds.
It's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
And like now like I mellowed out a lot in college, but maybe a little bit too much.
What was the thing?
I don't even know. Like looking back on it, I'm such the opposite of what I was like just going into college. Like now I at parties I like hang out in the corner kind of and just like watch stuff happening, or like I'm just on my phone all the time pretending to text someone so that I don't have to talk to people. Like all that kind of stuff.
But I feel like a lot of people are that way right now anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if we just all just put our phones down and actually do try and talk, we'll, you know, if we reach across to each other, realize they were all lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, well, I'm just bad at conversation in general. Like if I'm talking to someone, I'm like, we'll hit the end of a sentence and I'm like, well
ending a conversation is always tough. Like, yeah. It is always tough.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, you know, and we'll probably find that at the end of this podcast. It'll be like,
so
in about a half an hour, 20 minutes from now, we're gonna find out.
I got a text. I gotta go. Sorry.
Yeah. Bye. You know,
it's yeah,
but it is always difficult. You mm-hmm. know, that's a thing too. And also too, I always say to people like that's why I like this podcast, is that I can sit down and talk in great length. Like,
yeah,
this
exactly.
is the longest we've probably talked.
Yeah.
Like there's a couple nights where we've had long conversations and stuff like that, and time that we've spent and stuff like that. But like, this is like really the only time I get engaged with people and talk with them.
Yeah.
And it's funny that I have to do a trick where it's like I have to see it almost like as a job, as I'm building an empire,
right.
as I'm producing content, whatever the fuck that means.
That word.
That word.
I'm an artist who makes content.
Yeah. I just
makes my skin crawl.
Yeah. The thing is, at first I saw it that way, but then the more I feel, the more I've done, like, I'm like, this isn't shit. Is it fucking content? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah. You're like making something.
But the thing is, if I didn't have this obligation of like having to put something out every week, I don't know if I would do this with people.
Yeah. That's true.
I don't. Yeah, exactly.
I don't do this.
This is the only time I do it. And like, and also too, like different people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just like interviewed David French, who's like the guy who draws like all this like art in Charlotte.
Oh, wow.
Like if you Google like artist Charlotte, he's the guy that pops up.
Huh.
And like, I never would have met this guy, and he's a super cool dude.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then also like talking to my state senator.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wouldn't have talked to my state senator for an hour in length if I didn't have a podcast.
Which one? Which you just
Jeff talking? Jackson.
Okay.
So I definitely wouldn't have talked to him if it wasn't for this.
Yeah.
You know, but like, that's the thing is like, really, in fact, I think everybody's looking for this. Hence why podcasts are so popular, and hence why everybody has one these days. Like any two idiots can put one together.
Well, I mean, as long as you got 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. You got 5 minutes. But I feel like this is what people want and they're looking for, but we're all afraid to reach over and grab it from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm always worried that like, I mean, that's why like I don't go out a lot. Unless I'm doing a show or something, is because I don't know like What am I going to say? How are we going to, like, click? Like, what if I say something wrong? Like, what if they don't like me? What if they say I'm no good? Like,
yeah.
Just turn into, like, Marty McFly at the end. I don't think I could take that sort of rejection.
Yeah, well, but in the day, if you have those friends, it doesn't matter because mm-hmm. you think of those childhood friends, and we always think about, I really like hanging with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. It's because you were forced to.
Yeah.
In a sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, you were forced to sit mm-hmm. next to Melissa Goodman all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You were always next to this person in mm-hmm. class. You were always next to this person in class. You always got divvied up.
You're always friends with the person whose name next to you in the alphabet.
Exactly. You're always that person. Mm-hmm. So, like, you even if you had roadblocks in there, if you, like, didn't like each other through first and second grade, mm-hmm. maybe when you started playing football or whatever, that you have a commonality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then you get to sit next together on the bus. You practice sitting with each other. You're in class with each other. So, obviously, you have a common goal at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And maybe that's the way we all tricked ourselves and be friends with people, is we all have a common goal of getting out of high school alive. Yeah. Or, like, for me, sports was, like, you know, how I got a lot of friends because mm-hmm. we were all trying to win a football game or win a baseball game or basketball or wrestling or whatever, or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We always had a common goal. So that way we at least had common ground where, you know, if we find common ground with people, you know, like I think us as comedians, like we can sit around and like all of our goals is to be funny.
Right.
So we can all sit around, we have a commonality and we get past it.
Mm-hmm.
And we all pretty much know why everybody's here.
Yeah.
It's like civilians and other people that are bumbling around.
Yeah.
Like, what are you?
Like the normal people.
I don't know. What are you about? You know what I'm saying? And that's like my big problem is connecting with, like I said, civilians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you find that problem as well?
Well, I don't connect with people, I guess is the thing. Like, I just, anytime, like, I talk to people, like, briefly after, like, a show or something.
You and me, obviously, we can talk, and other comedians and stuff like that. Like, do you notice, like, a difference between, like people that buy a ticket to come see a show
mm-hmm.
as opposed to somebody who's a performer you connect with a little bit
more?
Like, you see, like, a clear divide. Like, for me, I've always seen that with pro wrestling, because when I try and talk to people about my life,
mm-hmm.
it just,
it
goes right over their heads.
Exactly. And, no, because comedians, I'm like, I can be more of myself, because, like, I know that, like, I'm weird, but, like, so are you. You're a comic, like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we can be weird together, and it's fine, because comedians aren't super judgmental, only judgmental of what you're doing on stage. Like,
yeah.
Comedians can be real bitchy, but only about what you're doing on stage. Like, in life, like, we're just talking to whatever, to each other, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, if I meet someone who is just, like, watching a show, like, yeah, I'd love to talk to you, but as soon as you say something about, like, what you do, like, I might be interested, but I've got no follow-up, you know? Like, I'd want to connect with people. I'm just very bad at it.
It just, it gets to a point where, like, okay, I have nothing that I can talk to you about whatsoever. Like,
You
have a different set of goals right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I try to date civilians. It's me and my girl. Me and my girlfriend have talked about it before.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't date humans.
You need someone that's, like, in the industry similar to
or at least understands it in a sense, because mm-hmm. it's like, and I made this quote one time too, because I had a lot of problems trying to date and find women and stuff like that I could connect with, because mm-hmm. I always looked for that, you know, and I look for it in the wrong places a lot of times. But it was always the thing that I always figured out what was wrong is you know, normal people, civilians, they are always working for the weekend.
Yeah.
Where I am working on the weekend.
Exactly. Like, Wednesdays are my Saturday.
Yes.
Basically.
That's
how it works out for me.
You know, and of course, then I also had a regular job too. So then it's like I doubled down on everything. Mm. I do have a regular job,
mm-hmm.
but then I have this other thing on the weekend that I do, which actually I'm far more busy then.
Exactly.
Which is when you don't do anything other than sit around in sweatpants and mm-hmm. watch football and mow the grass and go to farmers markets and cook a dinner at night. I'm throwing darts here, Jake. Like,
I don't even know if you're missing. That's
I don't even know if you're hitting the board.
did this conversation get like really pretentious? Like, well, we don't have normal friends, and normal people are the worst.
Well, like, there's a sense of normal, but there's people that are cool normal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like my friend Mike Lee,
mm-hmm.
who just started working where I work, so he's gonna get really weird very soon.
Good.
And he was in wrestling ready, so he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
But he lived a life where he was managing his parents, like, you know, Japanese steakhouse,
right?
So like he had a regular job, and like, but he knew of the pro wrestling business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you need that one person that's kind of got that hook that understands it enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like, he was a wrestler for a while and stuff like that, and then he retired from wrestling, and then he was just doing that all the time. And of course, like, he wanted to join the circus back up again, and he just started doing it again. And literally his first day, he was driving and delivering a ring to Waco, Texas. So like,
great first day.
He was in the office for 5 hours, and then he was on the road to Waco, Texas to deliver a 16-foot wrestling ring.
Whew.
So he's going to get back into the carnival and the madness as well. But like, when he was just working a regular job and he was just like a regular dude and stuff like that, it was kind of nice to talk to somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of was, and he's already seen behind the curtain. He already gets it.
Yep.
Like, and connect with that. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I've kind of deduced it was about like having a passion for something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He had a passion for something in his life, and that's why I can connect with.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend doesn't wrestle anymore.
Right.
But she runs her own wrestling promotion and stuff like that. So she had a passion for something. She knows what it's like to dedicate their life to something.
Exactly.
I feel like there's normal people out there that, you know, like, some people may dedicate their life to banking or a job. And that's mm-hmm. what I've learned with this is, like, I talk to brewers or restaurateurs or winemakers, and they've dedicated their life to it. And I feel like I can have a conversation with them.
Right.
But I also feel like there's people out there that don't have any ambition towards anything whatsoever.
Right.
And I can't really connect with you, because I don't know how you don't have that.
Exactly. Like, their passion in life is like watching Stranger Things on Netflix. Kind of like, that's all that they do.
Yeah. And I just don't know how you can bumble through life like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to figure out like what makes that type of person. And like I said, I don't want to sound pretentious and sounding very pretentious, but it's like, those are usually the people that are coming to see us at shows.
Right.
How do I figure out who you are and what you like?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there are times that, you know, we do shows and it's like all comedians laughing because they get that type of passion or it's something about that.
Right.
But it's the sense of like, that person is just a regular person. Like, I don't know how we connect with you, and I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even really know what my question is here, but like,
which is just a topic we're exploring.
We're just exploring it. But it is something that's like really concerned me recently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there are those people out there that don't have like this passion towards anything.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But like, you know, you and I obviously have a passion towards something, and we're trying to work towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not even have a specific idea what that is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're just working towards this big imaginary thing that exists in front of us.
Yeah. I mean, I always find myself like gravitating towards the people that are like that. Like, every friend that I can think of in my head, they're all creative types, or they're all like doers, and they're all like go-getters, and like, I'm going to go get this thing because this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to stop. Like, those, everyone that are my friends are like that. I can't even think of people that I know, except for maybe like someone that I'm friends with on Facebook, who's like, just work at Bank of America. Like, I couldn't even name those kinds of people, like, when I think about it.
But at the same time, too, like, you have to have those people, because those are the people that are going to come see what you do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Those are the people that appreciate. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. the people that made Stranger Things had a passion.
Yeah,
but then exactly. there has to be people out there that like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to understand that those are the people that we're trying to reach.
They're absolutely. Just
like, I'm looking for something that entertains me, that hits on all of my interest.
Mm-hmm.
So as a performer, I have to figure out how to connect with those people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if we can't even do it on a conversation level one-on-one, how can
how
I
do it on stage?
How can I throw a big net around that and bring you into, you know, my boat?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's the question we should always ask.
That's the struggle. Yeah. Cause I am very bad at talking to people. Like, and I want to be good at talking to people. I came up with I was looking through my time hop a couple of days ago. Uh-huh. And one of the statuses that came up was, I need to get better at talking to people after shows. And I was like, oh,
Well, haven't done that yet. Thanks, Time Hop.
thanks for reminding me that I have done zero progress in my life. Yeah, exactly. Appreciate it. Hey, do you got any more before pictures you want to put of me, too?
Uh-huh. Like, uh-huh. You know? It's a lot of reminders of stuff I haven't done yet.
And you're all like, my wait a minute, I wasn't that big back then. Why are you doing this?
Yeah, what's happening?
What's happening? I was actually in shape then. Why are you doing this?
Oh, man.
You can erase my history when I was, like, smaller.
Show me the good stuff.
Oh my gosh, but no, like, you know what I just brought up a big random thing here of the idea of something big, mm-hmm. you know, out there that we're all chasing. And I think we've had a conversation about this before, and I think I overtook the conversation, like much like I did just right here.
I don't mind.
And then told you all my views. Yeah, but, like, I don't think I got all of your views on, like, you know, like I said. Right now, we're just doing stand-up comedy, open mics, mm-hmm. you know, we're open micing, we're emceeing, we're mm-hmm. hosting, you know, just comedy shows right now, we're doing podcasts, and that's mm-hmm. kind of where we're at right now, but we're working towards something, like I said, we don't even know what it is.
Right.
At least I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that I would love to be a touring stand-up headliner. That
yeah.
would be, and really,
how nice would that be, right?
Yeah, you know, varying degrees of, like, of that are mm-hmm. interesting and fascinating and stuff like that. Like, you know, and that's what I would like to do. I'd like that to be a part of the income, and also too, like, the idea of being a writer is very interesting too, mm-hmm. and writing on a sitcom, and also being a headliner, standing comedian, yeah. and then also too, like, oh, and then I also had a podcast too. So basically, everything I'm doing, but just turned to 11.
Sure,
you know, is kind of, I feel like, what the remedy of success always is mm-hmm. whatever you do right now that you enjoy. Which
do
right
it
now
at I'm the doing top it, level.
Yeah, yeah, do it at the top level, but get to the point where you're maximizing everything that you're doing. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying, like doing a podcast and. All of these people listening, do stand up, and all these people are coming to see you.
Right,
you know, right on a show, and it's a so and so rated show, or it's a top nightly show of
yeah.
the night, or
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
top rated on Comedy Central, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be. But, like, you know, like, those are just some things that bounce around, like things that I want and I would love to achieve for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a specific, like, what's on your dream board? Is basically mm-hmm. what I'm going for.
Well, as I was cutting out pictures of magazines the other night,
I don't know. It's there's nothing, like, specific. It's all kind of abstract stuff like that. Like, I want to do what I do, but, like, at the top level that I could be doing it at. You know, I feel like that's really everyone's dream. That's a creative type. Like, I don't necessarily care about being, like, famous or whatever, but, like. I went to school for acting because I have a huge passion for acting. I'm not happy unless I'm acting in some form, you know, like I just want to make sure I want my job to be what makes me happy. That's the goal, I guess, is like I want to be able to do what I love as a career, if that makes sense.
Okay. Well, I asked this question to set up for the big question.
Oh, gosh.
The big question that I save at the end of this, because we're getting very close
uh-huh.
to the end.
Sure.
This is the big question that I ask everybody. I bring them into the home studio, or I corner them in their mm-hmm. offices or their locale or wherever, or their workspace.
What is the meaning of life?
Pretty close.
Oh, God.
Pretty close. And just warm up to getting to this point and get the most honest answer possible, mm-hmm. because I started this when I had this podcast, when I started having a nervous breakdown and trying to figure out the answer to this question myself.
Sure.
So I've tried to hunt down the answer from this from probably roughly about 80 plus people at this moment in time.
Oh,
and I don't know if I exactly heard the best answer mm-hmm. or the right answer, but I'm hoping that a collection of these will make sense.
Right.
You know, in a collage. But it's the question of success. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you? Do you know what it is? Do you have an exact idea? You just talked a little bit about, like, you know, making you happy and stuff like that, but is there a dollar amount attached to it? Is just being happy the thing? But mm-hmm. like, when I say the word success,
yeah,
what does that mean to you, and what do you envision yourself doing and being, and if you're doing those things, do you consider yourself a success?
Right. Hmm. That is hard.
So I'll save it for the end.
Sure. I mean, it is a lot of, like, I don't have, like, an exact dollar amount in my head, but I mean, I guess money does play a role a little bit, because, like, I know what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and like not being able to make rent or like skipping a meal because I have to, like, being embarrassed to tell people that food is a fourth priority in my life, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I want to be able to have a comfortable living, but I also know what it's like to have the jobs, like 9-to-5 data entry kind of stuff. Or like right now I'm working as like a jewelry salesman, but not even like a fancy like gold and diamonds. It's like
I was gonna say there is like zero jewelry on you. That's what, like,
no,
I if you could do that, I would envision you to have a few more gold chains, especially you know that, that chest hair you're showing off would look really good,
good
with
a
nice
chain, wouldn't
big
it?
Old chain right there.
I wear, well, because I work at a charm bracelet store. So it's all like tiny little pieces, like, oh, this one's shaped like a butterfly, okay, for grandmas. That's my job.
Okay.
Like, so like I
and 16-year-old girls in the '70s.
Exactly. You know, it's a very relevant market right now.
As soon as time travel gets kind of ironed out, you'll be good to go.
We'll be perfect. But like I'm not happy there because I'm not doing anything creative, you know, like I'm just selling merchandise. Like I've been working in retail my whole life. I had jobs at like Hot Topic and like that kind of thing. Like it's not what I want.
It's either that or wait tables.
Exactly. Yeah. So. And I'm real bad at carrying food. If someone is like asked me my recommendation, I'm like, I don't know, bacon's great. You have to, like, I have a very boring palate. Like everything about like, it's like the only jobs I could do are creative things, you know, like, it sounds like one of those like white people problems a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But like,
and I understand that, you know what I'm saying? And that's, but everybody's got to find and hunt something down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like, it's the only thing that like, that will make me happy, but it's also like the only thing that I have the ability to do, if that makes sense. Like I'm literally bad at other things. Like I do this because it's the only thing I can do. Like I didn't have a minor in college. Like there's no backup plan. It's this or nothing. So, you know, it's a lot of, I just want to make sure that I can pay my rent and go eat dinner when I want to eat dinner. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. Which so, like, I don't think that's too far of a goal for everybody to reach for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But doing the thing you want to do though.
Yeah. It's 'cause I mean, anybody can get a job somewhere and that's fine. Like, I have a job, but like it's not something I want to do. I want to be able to make a living doing the thing that I'm good at.
Well, it's a little bit broad question, so I'm gonna challenge you a little bit more.
Please.
Is, you know, you're talking about being creative and a creative job and stuff like that, but let's be interested in the aspect of fame of it.
Sure.
Let's say you got a job at being a video editor. Let's just say all of a sudden I dubbed you with every shortcut that Adobe possesses ever in your brain.
Sure.
And you've become one of the best, you know, editors or a very competent editor that can do all kinds of different things. May it be commercials for banks or, you know, editing short films or whatever else. You're now an editor.
Okay.
Now, but you have this theater degree of you being in front of the camera, being a performer and having all this need.
Right.
Would just being, you know, a very competent video editor that people can rely on that, you know, yields you a living, is that good enough for you? Or is the idea of being in front of the stage in the spotlight what you mean by having a creative job?
Well, I think I would have to be on the stage because I being good at that would be awesome. And it's a very creative job. And it's like a job that also like pays well. Like it's, but that's the problem is that I wouldn't feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. If that makes sense.
It feels like a weird displacement.
Right.
Like, you're only enhancing what somebody else is doing as opposed to you doing the thing.
Well, I mean, editors can be just as creative as like, as writers can, cause they can
absolutely
change a whole scene with like a couple clicks.
I'm well aware of that.
Yeah. Like, I super respect editors. I don't think that I would be able to do it, I guess, cause I don't, there's like a longing in me. Like I'm not happy unless I'm like, I don't know, like acting, I guess. I don't know what it is. Like I'm not worried about being famous necessarily. Like if I only had like a couple lines in like commercials or even just like background stuff in movies. If I'm paying my rent and I'm on set, then that's like, that's it. Like I did it, you know, like I feel like that's almost like when you win life is like, I don't have to have a 9-to-5. I'm spending my days on a film set. And like, that's how I got my money, you know? Like, I guess it's not a great answer.
No, it's no, I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's something that I've had to fight with myself. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, like a couple of years ago, I was thinking that my role in pro wrestling was going to be behind the scenes and
right.
putting together shows for other people for their opportunity to get success and move on and mm-hmm. do these things. And I was going to be enabling that. And then I come to find out, you know, and I was making steps and doing, and I've been doing it already for quite a long period mm-hmm. of time. And it got to that point that I was very close to that. And a certain series of events happened. And I started to realize that all the hard work that I made for everybody else didn't matter.
Hmm.
They didn't care. It went unrecognized. And a lot of them told me right to their face, they didn't give a shit about it.
Oh.
And made it very clear. And it was very obvious to me that me taking a back seat and doing things for other people was not only not giving me the satisfaction that I was helping people because they were not recognizing it.
Right.
Nobody else was recognizing it. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize more that me sacrificing myself for other people, that went unrewarded. And
right.
I realized that, oh gosh, I've made a terrible mistake. I can't turn this ship around. I mm-hmm. was on this path, you know, and I kind of hit the escape hatch and got out of it and realized that I have to get out of this as quickly as possible, because not only doing that stuff and not being appreciated for it is definitely not a path I want to go.
Yeah.
But then I had to really analyze, why did I put myself in that position to begin with? And I realized it was because I didn't believe in myself. I didn't think I was good enough
mm-hmm.
to be the star, be the center of attention
right.
in pro wrestling, and be the guy that stood out in front and is like, that's the guy, even though inside I knew it,
mm-hmm.
but mm-hmm. I reveled in the fact of being the guy that I knew it, but everybody else didn't know it, you know, and I'd even take a little back seat to right. like kind of like set myself up for a situation where I could come in and save the day. But then mm-hmm. when I would come in and save the day, or I would sacrifice myself for somebody else, nobody appreciated that. Nobody saw it.
Yeah.
Nobody reveled in it. So then I had to like do a lot of soul searching and figure out that I have to start doing stuff for myself.
Yeah.
And I have to get away from it. And, mm-hmm. but I could have been someone that just edits videos and runs a promotion and make other people look fantastic. But I realized that I would not be happy doing that. I would be happy in front of the people doing my thing and being very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is I never believed in myself enough to do so.
Right.
So that's where I ran into, is I had to start believing in myself at 33.
Yeah. No, that's hitting real close to home. But the good thing about like having those kinds of jobs and seeing like, I mean, they're called thankless jobs, but you don't actually think about how like, they're literally thankless
yes.
jobs.
Like, you think that
you hear that
attention.
Phrase a lot, right? But then you don't think about it until you're in it, and you're like, "This is literally like invisible." Like people just think that this stuff just appears out of nowhere. Like everything is made by someone, you know. And I think a good thing about like having those kinds of jobs is that like it shows you when you're on the other side. Like now when you're performing and doing that kind of stuff, you have such a greater appreciation for those people, you know,
and those people appreciate it
mm-hmm.
when those people get that recognition.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, like it pushes you further.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, like anytime that I've been put in a situation, like when I was a scholarship athlete at Western Illinois University, I was always nice to the equipment guys.
Right.
And the football players were shitty to the equipment because they were fucking horrible to them.
Right. Yeah.
I saw these guys that had complete full rides where I was on a like a minor scholarship,
mm-hmm.
like a very small couple hundred dollars a semester scholarship. Mm-hmm. And I would always be nice to them. And I can't tell you how many times those guys helped me out. Like, yeah. I'm running late from class and I forgot my workout gear. And they just be like, hey, here's some shorts, here's a shirt, here's some shoes. Just have it back to me by this time.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? How many times they hook me up, help me out, and be like, hey, man, if you want to bring your regular laundry in, I got this industrial wash. You know, like, oh, just little, yeah, like help me outs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And just, like, you know, like, look out for me because I just treated them like a human being and told them thank you for doing a job that nobody ever treated them.
Yeah.
You know, like a human being for.
I used to be real bad about that when I was like in high school and in college. Like I was very self-absorbed. I wasn't paying attention to anything that was going on, that kind of stuff. I was a terrible human being. Like that, like that's the one thing that like time hop has taught me the most is how awful I used to be. And like every day is a reminder of like being the worst person. And so now, like, I try to like go out of my way to like thank people. Like I want them to know that when I'm doing something, I know that I only can do it because of these people, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I can't do camera work. Like watching you do that is amazing to me because I don't get any of it.
Yeah.
Like it's another language to me, and like what, like lighting and like all that stuff, they're all so good at it and it blows my mind. Like I can't figure it out.
Yeah. I'm barely passable at it, and if mm-hmm. I can find somebody like that had my passion towards something, mm-hmm. oh, we'd be best friends forever.
Yeah.
You'd be the greatest person in the world to me. You'd mm-hmm. be the most valuable person there is. I am not very good, as probably people finding out in this video shot. They're like, your head, your eye line's all wrong, or whatever. I'm just pointing a camera at the two of us right now.
Yeah.
You know, like I am not all that great at it, but I work hard and I got at least a vision towards it. So like, you know, being a director is something to be appealing, but being surrounded by very talented people would be awesome mm-hmm. that are looking out for my best interests and telling that person when they do a good job, like, thank you so much for protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I would look for
for
collaboration, is somebody that's very good at something and them just doing their thing and me just coming and telling them thank you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, those people are who I live and would love to find.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like I've directed stuff before and I've noticed, like, wow, like a final outcome being like really good in a short film has nothing to do with like me as a director. It had everything to do with just how this one light was pointed just the right way that like changes everything. And like, I never even thought of that. This guy over here did. He's so good. Like, why isn't his name like on posters, you know? Like,
exactly. Cause he's the one that did this, you mm-hmm. know? And it goes back to kind of my equipment guy thing, but like it was something that somebody told me this one time, or I formulated this thought in my head, or something I heard, is like, you always be nice to somebody that has a bunch of keys. But like, but you got to take that as more of a metaphor,
right?
Because equipment guys, they always got like a mm-hmm. like janitors, they have keys to all the doors,
right?
But like, sometimes a key is not a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a key is a talent.
Hmm.
It's the ability to run equipment. So
right.
You always got to find those people that have a lot of keys to open doors for you,
mm-hmm.
and be good to those people because you might need to walk through that door.
Yeah,
and there's another person that can open up for you.
That's awesome.
So. It's a nice little bow.
Yeah,
it's a nice little bow at the end of this, Jake Stewart, that we kind of tied this up. So, but no, that you have a live microphone right now. Before we get out of here, okay. Give people. Yeah, if you didn't know, already know.
Oh, no.
It's like that new Stephen King movie where the cell phones come alive.
I'm sorry. Thank you for what you do, microphone.
Exactly. We appreciate you. You have the key to our audio success.
You make me sound good, and I appreciate it.
But let everybody know about your Twitter handles, websites, all the things that people need to know about you and how they can contact with you.
At @thatjakestewart, that's my Twitter, and also everything, all the websites, @thatjakestewart, with a D at the end. Not a T. That's a big problem in my life. Is that Stewart is a very popular name,
mm-hmm.
but it's not my name.
It's Stewart.
It's Stewart, like a waiter on a boat. That's. I come from a long line of waiters on boats. So that's how you can find me.
I'm just picturing you're going, my great grandfather was on the Titanic. He was a fantastic steward. And then my great great grandfather was on the Lusitania.
Then, not only are they waiters on boats, they're waiters on doomed boats. Doomed boats.
And then my family decided to get our the steward business. So it's caused a lot of problems. People understand what my last name is.
You're not a waiter on a boat.
Long story. My mother was on the Lusitania. My grandfather was on the Titanic. Mm-hmm.
They were all very proud men. They went down with the ship, everyone. Serving the captain.
Just a little, like, steward, you're a good man. I'm like, yes, sir. It's been an honor serving for you, sir.
Not with you, serving you.
Serving you. Okay. Oh.
Yep. That's where you can find me.
That's where you can find me. Oh, this is another edition of Strangeness.
This has been a DSCT.TV production.